Seems we are ready then. I see quite a number of people. We understand each other. And we come to a next movement. They're long, what Joyce called sentences, and that's the second last one. Who knows? Well, we hear it now first.
Who knows? Is there anything the matter with my insides? Or have I something growing in me? Getting that thing like that every week. When was it last? I quit Monday, yes. It's only about 3 weeks. I ought to go to the doctor. Only it should be like before I married. When I had that white thing coming from me, and Flowey made me go to that dry old stick Dr. Collins for women's diseases on Pembroke Road. Your vagina, he called it. I suppose that's how he got all the gilt mirrors and carpets, getting round those rich ones off Stephen's Green, running up to him for every little fiddle faddle. Her vagina and her cock in China. They've money, of course, so they're all right. I wouldn't marry him, not if he was the last man in the world. Besides, there's something queer about their children. Always smelling around those filthy bitches all sides, asking me if what I did had an offensive odour. What did you want me to do with the one thing? Gold, maybe? What a question. If I smothered it all over his wrinkly old face room with all my compliment, I suppose he'd know then. And could you pass it easily? Pass what? I thought he was talking about the Rock of Gibraltar, the way he puts it. That's a very nice invention too, by the way. Only I like letting myself down after in the hole as far as I can squeeze and pull the chain then to flush it. Nice, cool pins and needles. Still, there's something in it, I suppose. I always used to know by Millie's when she was a child whether she had worms or not. Still, all the same, paying him for that. How much is that, doctor? 1 guinea, please. And asking me had I frequent omissions. Where do those old fellows get all the words they have? Omissions. With his short-sighted eyes on me cocked sideways. I wouldn't trust him too far to give me chloroform or God knows what else. Still, I liked him when he sat down to write the thing out, frowning so severe. His nose, intelligent like that. You be damned, you lying strap. Oh, anything, no matter who, except an idiot. He was clever enough to spot that, of course. That was...
Good. Just a minute. Yeah, who knows? Is there something the matter with me, my inside? Or have I something growing in me, getting that thing like that? There's always that kind of nondescript, that thing, like that, every week. That's a bit of an exaggeration. When was it last? And that's not completed. Wait, Monday. Yes, it's only about 3 weeks. Yeah, makes sense. And I ought to go to the doctor. Only, it would be like before I married him, and she obviously went to a doctor, when I had that white thing coming from me, whatever that is. And Flowey, friend, made me go to that dry old stick, Dr. Collins, for women's diseases. That's obviously on the plate. On Pembroke Road. Pembroke Road is a noble, a rich district where these doctors would be. Your vagina, he called it. It's obviously a word that she wasn't familiar with. Nowadays, everybody is, but not then. I suppose that she got all these gilt mirrors and carpets, obviously costs a lot with these doctors, getting around those rich ones that would live around Pembroke Road, off Stephen's Green, running up to him. for every little fiddle-faddle, her vagina, and her cochinchina. That must be a Spanish word. I don't have my notes right here. Does anyone know the Spanish, what that is?
Ostracine.
They've money, of course. So they're all right. I wouldn't marry him. Not if he lost the last man in the world. Besides, there's something queer about their children. Always smelling around those filthy bitches. All sides. Asking me if what I did had an offensive odor. That's, of course, a polite way of talking about smells. Offensive odor. And, of course, these doctors everywhere have sometimes a problem with breath. They can't use the vulgar words, and often patients don't know the medical terms. What did he want me to do? But the one thing. Gold, maybe. What a question. Still, if I smothered all over his wrinkly old face, I think we don't know what the word smothered exactly means. We understand it from the context. For him, with all my compliments, I suppose he knows them. And could you pass it easily, the doctor would ask. Again, it's a sort of euphemism. Pass it. Pass what? I thought he was talking about the Rock of Gibraltar. I think you can pass a rock, the way he put it. That's a very nice invention too, by the way. Only I like letting myself down after in the hole as far as I can. Squeeze and pull the chain then to flush it. It appears that the doctor had a special kind of toilet that sprinkled water over her from underneath. Flush it. Nice cool pins and needles. So, there's something in it. I suppose I always knew by Millie's when I was a child whether she had worms or not. Still, all the same, paying him for that. How much is that, doctor? 1 guinea, please. And of course, these doctors would charge in guineas. That is more upper class guineas, a pound and an extra shilling. Where is that? 1 guinea, please. And asking me, had I frequent omissions? He's probably used the word emissions, as something brought out. And she doesn't quite know that. She knows omission. Where do those old fellows get all the words they have? Omissions. With his short-sighted eyes on me, cocked always. I wouldn't trust him too far to give me chloroform. Of course, there were stories of doctors abusing female patients using chloroform. At least there were stories circulating. Or God knows what else. Still, I liked him. When he sat down to write the thing out, recipe, frowning so severe. His nose intelligent like that. You be damned, you lying scrap. I don't quite know why this comes up. That must be different from what the doctor says. Somebody else. I can't quite accommodate that. Oh, anything, no matter who, except an idiot. He was clever enough to spot that, of course, and then they go on.
He was clever enough to spot that, of course, that was all. Thinking of him and his mad, crazy letters. My precious one. Everything connected with your glorious body. Everything underlined. That comes from it is a thing of beauty and of joy forever. something he got out of some nonsensical book, that he had me always at myself 4 or 5 times a day sometimes, and I said I hadn't. Are you sure? Oh, yes, I said, I'm quite sure. In a way, that shut him up. I knew what was coming next, only natural, weak as it was. He excited me. I don't know how, the first night ever we met when I was living in Rehoboth Terrace. We stood staring at one another for about 10 minutes, as if we met somewhere. I suppose on account of my being Jewess, looking after my mother. He used to amuse me, the things he said, with a half-sleuthering smile on him. And all the Doyle said he was going to stand for a Member of Parliament. Oh, isn't I the born fool to believe all his blather about Home Rule and the Land League? Sending me that long strool of a song out of the Huguenots to sing in French, to be more classy. Au beau pays de la Touraine, that I never even sang once, explaining and rigmaroling about religion and persecution. He won't let you enjoy anything naturally. Then, Mighty, as a great favour, the very first opportunity he got a chance in Brighton Square, running into my bedroom, pretending the ink got in his hands to wash it off with Albion milk and sulphur soap I used to use. The gelatine still round it. Oh, I laughed myself sick at him that day.
So, of course, it was all thinking of him and his mad, crazy letters. That was the early day when he sent her letters. My precious one, and she's highlighting it, precious one, anything connected with her glorious body, it's also capitalized, everything underlined, that comes from it is a thing of beauty. Now, everything that comes from it is a little bit strange, but it shows a Joycean trend that Joyce, we know that from the letters he wrote to his companion, Nora, that he liked excremental things. That comes from it's a thing of beauty. Now, you know that is Keats. A thing of beauty is a joy forever. And the joy forever, Bloom liked to quote Keats and Byron. And that's a very well-known saying. Something he got out of some nonsensical book about romantic poetry that he had. Me always at myself. 4 and 5 times a day sometimes. And I said, I hadn't. I hope that's a question of masturbation that came up. Are you sure? Oh, yes, I said, I'm quite sure. In a way that shut him up. I knew what was coming next. Only natural weakness it was. He excited me. I don't know how. The first night we ever met. I'm sure you remember that. When I was living in Rehoboth Terrace, that's on the south side, and we stood staring at one another for about 10 minutes, as if we met somewhere. Here there's a touch of perhaps reincarnation. Remember how Bloom tried to explain the word metempsychosis? That you, if you're reincarnated, which, as I say, some cultures believe, you could, of course, have met before. But it could also be ordinary when they were younger. I suppose, on account of my being Jewish looking after my mother. Now, we don't know much. We know that the Jewish looking, she looked Jewish. It is just possible that Molly is technically Jewish from her mother, whereas Bloom is not. His mother had an Irish name after my mother. He used to amuse me. the things he said. Without half snoothering smile on him, and all the Doyles, these are family friends, but particularly the Doyle, said he was going to stand for a Member of Parliament. Now, there are some hints that Bloom at one time entertained thoughts that he might take a political career, which obviously didn't come to very much with his background and all of that. But Bloom had political interests and he had ambitions. Oh, wasn't I the born fool to believe all his blather about home rule and the land leap? So Bloom was interested in politics and home rule. That's one of the motives in Finnish, of course, was the attempt of Irish parliamentary thing to get home rule, to get local autonomy, that they could do something, whereas everything was ruled by England. And the land league was an important political move when they tried to improve the fate of Irish peasants. And these were serious attempts, and Bloom, in a way, was sympathetic to it. Sending me that long stool of a song out of the Huguenots. We know that Bloom is interested in the opera The Huguenot by Meyerbeer. Meyerbeer was a Jew who had some conflict with Wagner, who was anti-Semitic, and The Huguenots is an opera about religious persecution. The Huguenots were French Protestants, and they were driven out. There was a massacre, and the Huguenots went to the various countries and usually were very clever and very successful economically. So Bloom likes the opera and likes who are persecuted religiously, as we have heard before. I'm singing in French, it's a French opera, to be more classy. Au beau pays de la Touraine, she remembers. She had to sing that I never even sang once, explaining and rigmaroling about religion. Bloom was explaining the background and persecution. He won't let you enjoy anything naturally. Then might he, as a great favor, the very first opportunity he got a chance in Brighton Square, that is also in the south side of Joyce was born in Brighton Square, by the way. Running into my bedroom, so they've already seen each other in the streets, and he looked for an opportunity to get into her home, pretending the ink got on his hands to wash it off with the Albion milk and sulfur soap. These were obviously the soaps they had. So Bloom pretending to go to her home. I used to use. And the gelatin still round it, probably wrapped. Oh, I laughed myself sick at him. That day I, and now is another thought coming.
I should not make an all night sitting on this affair. I ought to make chambers a natural size, so that a woman could sit in it properly. He kneels down to do it. I suppose there isn't an old creation another man with the habits he has. Look at the way he's sleeping at the foot of the bed. How can he, without a hard bolster? It's well he doesn't kick or he might knock out all my teeth. Breathing, with his hand on his nose, like that Indian god he took me to show one wet Sunday in the museum in Kildare Street. All yellow, in a pinafore, lying on his side on his hand, with his 10 toes sticking out. That, he said, was a bigger religion than the Jews and our lords both put together, all over Asia. Imitating him as he's always imitating everybody. Suppose he used to sleep at the foot of the bed too, with his big square feet up in his wife's mouth. Stinking thing anyway. Where's this, those napkins are? Ah, yes, I know. I hope the old press doesn't creak. Knew it would. He's sleeping hard, had a good time somewhere. Still, she must have given him great value for his money. Of course he has to pay for it from her. Oh, this nuisance of a thing. I hope they'll have something better for us in the other world. Tying ourselves up. Oh, God help us. That's all right for tonight. Now, the lumpy old jingly bed always reminds me of old Cohen. I suppose he scratched himself in it often enough. And he thinks Father bought it from Lord Napier that I used to admire when I was a little girl, because I told him.
Yep. finding my passage. The day. I better not make an all-night sitting on this affair. I hope you have found it in the meantime. It's probably not easy to, or it is not easy to find the passage in the, so you should mark it. Better not make an all-night sitting on this affair. She's still sitting on the chamber pot. They ought to make chambers, meaning chamber pots, a natural size, so that the woman could sit on it properly. He kneels down to do it. Now that's a straight to do, to urinate. He doesn't kneel it down. I suppose there isn't in all creation another man with the habits he has. Look at the way he's sleeping. At the foot of the bed. How can he? Without the hard bolster, so they're sleeping upside down, his feet near her head and the other way around. And we've heard that Joyce sometimes seemed to do this. Without the hard bolster, it really doesn't kick. Or he might knock out all my teeth, breathing with his hand on his nose, so he has that kind of fetal position almost. Like that Indian god he took me to show on wet Sunday in the museum at Kildare Street. You know, there's a National Museum there, and Bloom has been there and looked at the tortoises, all yellow in a pinafore, lying on his side. So there must be in Dublin a picture of a lying Buddha. I only know them sitting, but there seems to be one there. I suppose we could even get a picture of it on his hand. With his 10 toes sticking out, that he said was a bigger religion. Bloom, as we know, compares religion, and he thought the Buddha is a bigger religion than the Jews and our lords, than the Jewish and Christian religion. Bloom likes to compare them. And from what I know, the Buddhism hasn't got these personal, often very strict and revengeful gods. Both put together, all over Asia, imitating him, Bloom, lying like that, as is always imitating everybody. And that's true. Bloom is a kind of, Ulysses is a kind of everybody. I suppose he used to sleep at the foot of the bed too, with his big square feet up in his wife's mouth. she thinks that was Buddha. Damn this stinking thing anyway. She's still sitting on the pole. Where's this, those napkins are? She wants to wipe herself. Oh, yes. You see, it's not easy for Joyce to suggest in what is only thoughts what is going on, sitting, the movements, what the hands does. Ah, yes, I know. I hope the old press, these are cupboards, doesn't creak. Ah, I knew it would. He's sleeping hard. Had a good time somewhere. Still, she must have given him a great value for his money. She imagined that Blue must have had some kind of affair or adventure. And if it is so, she's quite casual about that. Though we know it isn't true. Of course, she has to pay for it from her. Oh, this nuisance of a thing. I hope they'll have something better for us in the other world than chamber pots and that and the need for it. Tying ourselves up. God help us. That's all right for tonight. Now the lumpy old jingly bed. And you remember that the Blooms and Molly's bed jingle is one thing we heard from the fourth chapter onward, the jingle bed. Always imagine of old Cohen. I suppose he scratched himself in it often enough. So they have a bed from old Cohen, and he thinks he's scratching him. It's not a new bed. Old Cohen, the Jewish name, when we don't know where it's from, she knows often enough. And he thinks father, her father in Gibraltar, bought it from Lord Napier. He was governor at some time of the British colony of Gibraltar, that I used to admire when I was a little girl, because I told him. So here we know something else, and that is Bloom thinks the bed he lives in is a special one, better class from an aristocrat, Lord Napier, and she knows it's only from old Cohen who's scratching it. Now, this has some meaning in the relations to the Odyssey, because there, at the end, Odysseus, who is disguised as a beggar, is not the king, but his youth, he's old and wrinkled, and he has to prove himself on an occasion also when he has killed all the suitors. That Joyce does not do in his novel. Killed all the Judas. He washed himself and shows himself to his wife, Penelope. But she says, I don't know him. Who is he? And then she uses a trick. She says to her servants, go and leave this stranger and this beggar to the bed of Odysseus so he can sleep that night. And at this moment, Odysseus flares up and says, how? This cannot be, because I made the bed myself. It is built into an olive tree, and because he knows the secret of the bed, he is identified, and his wife acknowledges him. So it's Odysseus knowing the secret of the bed. In reverse, Bloom does not know the secret of the bed. So there is a relationship that is the other way around. It's reversed, not parallel or anything like that, because I told him. Now, and now we come to a new Please.
Yeah, no. Oh, I like my bed. God, here we are. As bad as ever after 16 years. How many houses were we in at all? Raymond Terrace and Ontario Terrace and Lombard Street and Hollis Street. And he goes about whistling every time we're on the run again, his Huguenots, or the Frogs March, pretending to help the men with our four sticks of furniture. And then the City Arms Hotel, worse and worse, says Warden Daly. That charming place on the landing, always somebody inside, praying, then leaving all their stinks after them. Always know who was in there last. Every time we're just getting on right, something happens, or he puts his big foot in it. Tom's and Healy's and Mr. Cuff's and Drimmy's. Either he's going to be run into prison over his own lottery tickets that was to be all our salvations, or he goes and gives impudence. We'll have him coming home with a sack soon out of the Freeman too, like the rest, on account of those Sinner Fein or the Freemasons. Then we'll see if the little man he showed me dribbling along in the wet, all by himself round by Cody's Lane, will give him much consolation that he says is so capable and sincerely Irish. He is indeed, judging by the sincerity of the trousers I saw on him.
I'll wait. Back the place because I told him. Easy, she said. Piano, meaning not loud, like musical instructions. Piano. Oh, I like my bed. Obviously, she went back to bed now. Good. And then I always liked that sentence. Here we go, as bad as ever after 16 years. It's an interesting sentence. It's here, it's bad as ever. But the whole sentence does have a kind of uplifting, cheerful tone. Here we are, as bad as ever. Mm-hmm. So the tone contradicts what it is, and it seems quite typical of it. After 16 years, how many houses were we in at all? Raymond Terrace. That was in the early days of the marriage. And Ontario Terrace. And Lombard Street. Those were the good days of the marriage. When I was living in Herobeth Terrace, we stood... No, sorry. And Hollis Street. And so in Hollis Street, they were no longer so well off. They were fairly poor and had to take in work. And he goes about whistling every time we're on the run again. His Huguenots on the Frogs March. There's a Frogs March, and Frogs, of course, is also slang for the French opera. Pretending to help the man with our four sticks of furniture, and then the City Arms Hotel. For a while, as this comes up very often, the Blooms lived near the cattle market in the City Arms Hotel, and that was obviously quite cheap and affordable. Don't mix it up with our notions of staying in a hotel. And the hotel probably was for people living in the cattle market. Worse and worse, says Warden Daly, whoever that is. That charming place on the landing, that must have been, you can imagine, a hotel where there was only, for each floor, there was only one toilet on the landing between the floors, used by everybody on the same floor. That wasn't very convenient or very appetizing. Charming place on the landing, always somebody inside, praying the joke, then leaving all their stinks after them. Always know who was in there last. So that's different from our own notions of hygiene. every time you're just getting on right, something happens. They've been to many places, and Bruma's had many professions. Anything happens, or he puts his big foot in it. Tom's. He was working for Tom's. That was a printing place. And Healy's, we heard, that was a stationery. And Mr. Cuff's, that is the cattle dealer. And Remis was an insurance. It was an insurance company. So Bloom had many professions. Ivy is going to be run into prison over his old lottery tickets. And we also have heard, but it's not quite how, that Bloom sold lottery tickets of the Royal Hungarian lottery. And we don't have much information, but it was illegal in Great Britain to sell lottery tickets, especially foreign lottery tickets. And one time he had trouble about that, lottery tickets. That was to be all our salvations. Then he goes and gives impudence. And that is another event that is mentioned very briefly. And when Bloom worked for the cattle market, he gave impudence to a client, probably, as I guess, by telling off a client who was probably rough to the animals, to the cows or something like that. And of course, you mustn't insult the clients. Or he gives him impudence. We'll have him coming home with a sack soon. That's another way of when he will be sacked, dismissed, fired. Out of the Freeman too. He's now being a freelance for the Freeman's journal advertisements. Like the rest, on account of the Sinn Féin, or the Freemasons. Now, Bloom told Molly about the new movement, Sinn Féin, Ireland for the Irish, which was then beginning and is still a party in present-day Ireland. I think they're in government even. Or the Freemasons. So Bloom must have been, but that's never quite clear to me, the Freemasons. Then we'll see if the little man he showed me dribbling along in the wet, all by himself, round by Cody's Lane, and the new man is Griffith, Arthur Griffith, with a new political party. We'll give him much consolation. And he says he's so capable and sincerely Irish. He is indeed. And that is, as I said, the new political leader, Arthur Griffith. Judging by the sincerity of the trousers I saw on him. Yeah. And now we have another interlude.
Wait. There's George's church bell. Wait. 3/4 the hour. Wait. 2:00. Well, that's a nice hour of the night for him to be coming home at. To anybody climbing down into the area. If anybody saw him, I'll knock him off that little habit tomorrow. First, I'll look at his shirt to see, or I'll see if he has that French letter still in his pocketbook. I suppose he thinks I don't know. Deceitful men. All their 20 pockets aren't enough for their lies. Then why should we tell them? Even if it's the truth they don't believe you, then tucked up in bed like those babies in the aristocrat's masterpiece he brought me another time. As if we hadn't enough of that in real life, without some old aristocrat or whatever his name is disgusting you more. With those rotten pictures, children with two heads and no legs. That's the kind of villainy they're always dreaming about, with not another thing in their empty heads. They ought to get slow poison, the half of them. Then tea and toast for him. buttered on both sides, and new laid eggs. I suppose I nothing any more when I wouldn't let him lick me in Hollow Street one night. Mad, mad. Tyrant as ever for the one thing. He slept on the floor half the night, naked, the way Jews used when somebody dies belong to them, and wouldn't eat any breakfast or speak a word, wanting to be petted. So I thought I stood out enough for one time and let him. He does it all wrong, too, thinking only of his own pleasure. His tongue is too flat, or I don't know what. He forgets that we, then I don't. I'll make him do it again if he doesn't mind himself, and lock him down to sleep in the coal cellar with the black beetles. I wonder, was it her? Josie. Off her head at my cast-offs. He's such a born liar, too. No, he'd never have the courage with a married woman. That's why he wants me and Boylan. Though as for her, Dennis, she calls him. That forlorn-looking spectacle. You couldn't call him a husband.
No.
The trousers I saw in him. Wait. There's George's church bell. You know, St. George, the church, is close and you can hear the bell. Wait, 3/4 hour. I wait 2 o'clock. Maybe it has it's a 1/4 to 2. Maybe there are 4. Well, that's a nice hour of the night for him to be coming home at, to anybody. Climbing down into the area. We know that Bloom climbed over the area railing and let himself down and went in by the pantry. If anybody saw him, I'll knock him off that little habit tomorrow. First, I look at his shirt to see, or I'll see if he has that French letter in his pocketbook. So Bloom had a condom that was called a French letter, and wouldn't be easy to buy, by the way. So Bloom has, hopefully it seems, always a condom in his pocket, just in case, still in his pocketbook. I suppose he thinks, I don't know. Deceitful men, all their 20 pockets aren't enough for their lies. Then why should we tell them, even if it's the truth? They don't believe you. Then tucked up in bed, like those babies in the aristocrat's masterpiece. That is a book that has been mentioned. It was a book that was called Aristotle's Masterpiece, but it was not by Aristotle, the Greek philosopher. It was a book, there are many, many variants of it. We have some in the foundation. It was a book for midwives and what to do and homely recipes and things like that. So it's that. But it had an air of being erotic or something like that. And I remember, maybe I've said that before, when I first came to Dublin and met somebody who became a very good friend, I said, would be interesting to have a book like that. He said, oh, I have one, I can bring it to you. And sure enough, he gave it to me with great generosity. But he being a good Irish Catholic, he said, it's pornography. Now, I can tell you it's not pornography, though it has a somewhat sexy picture at the beginning. It is not, but it counted as that. So Aristotle's masterpiece, and it's not by Aristotle, and it isn't a masterpiece. He brought me another time. As if we hadn't enough of that in real life. Without some old aristocrat, Aristophanes, or whatever his name is, disgusting, you know, with those rotten pictures, children with had two heads and all that. And there are, in fact, illustrations of the very primitive ones of fetuses in red and all kinds of misbirth and things like that. So that is all the eroticism you would get, and no legs. That's the kind of villainy they're always dreaming about, with not another thing in their empty heads. They ought to get slow poison, the half of them. And then she comes back. Then tea and toast for him, buttered on both sides. As it began, she was upset, and that whole thing set her off. That Bloom seemed to ask a breakfast in bed. And here now, she even elaborated, tea and toast for him buttered on both sides. As I said, we haven't heard anything in the previous chapter that he said something. We don't even have some evidence that he said, by the way, now I have something to ask you. So I don't know if he really said that, but she thinks he said it. And it's now an elaborate order with tea and toast, but on both sides, you see, that's exactly the breakfast that he brought her in the morning. A new laid eggs, she thinks, when he said anything about eggs. The strange thing is, as I must have said several times, when Bloom in the morning, the previous day, thinks a breakfast, he thinks no good eggs in this mouth. So he doesn't. So I think it unlikely that Bloom did this, but this is a matter of interpretation and opinion. I suppose I'm nothing anymore when I wouldn't let him lick me in Holler Street one night, Holler Street near the maternity hospital where they lived and were poor. Man, man, tyrant as ever, for the one thing, he slept on the floor half the night, probably in protest, naked, the way the Jews used when somebody dies. This may be, somebody may know better, a Jewish custom that you sleep on the floor. When somebody dies, belong to them. That seems to be a strange phrase here. And wouldn't eat any breakfast or speak a word, waiting to be petted. So I thought I stood out enough for one time and let him. So Bloom, out of protest for withhold favors, slept on the floor until he got his way again. He does it all wrong too, thinking only of his own pleasure. His tongue is too flat. Or I don't know what. He forgets that. The next thing that we then have, I can't accommodate for at all. I don't. I'll make him do it again, if he doesn't mind himself, and lock him down to sleep in the coal cellar with the black beetles. I wonder what it hurt Josie off her head, because Bloom told that he met Josephine Breen, who that was before Josie Powell, that he knew well. So that's an old acquaintance. Off her head, with my cast-offs. He's such a born liar too. No, he'd never have the courage with a marriage woman. She dismisses that. And Bloom had absolutely no intention. That's why he wants me in Boylan. Though as far as her Dennis, Josie Breen is married to Dennis Breen. He's the man who is a bit mad and he walks around in his bath slippers and he got the card UP up. So that is Dennis Breen, as he calls him. That forlorn looking spectacle. You couldn't call him a husband. Yeah. And there's something red again.
Yes, it's some little bit she's got in with. Even when I was with him with Millie at the college races, that hornblower with the child's bonnet on the top on his knob, let us into by the back way, he was throwing his sheep's eyes at those two, doing skirt duty up and down. I tried to wink at him first, no use, of course. And that's the way his money goes. This is the fruits of Mr. Paddy Dignam. Yes, they were all in great style at the grand funeral in the paper Boylan brought in. If they saw a real officer's funeral, that'd be something. Reversed arms, muffled drums, the poor horse walking behind in black. El Blue and Tom Kernan and that drunken little barry man that bit his tongue off, falling down the men's WC drunk in some place or other. And Martin Cunningham and the two Daedaluses. And Fanny McCoy's husband, White Head of Cabbage. Skinny thing with a turn in her eye, trying to sing my songs. She'd want to be born all over again. In her old green dress with a low neck, she can't attract them any other way. Like dabbling on a rainy day. I see it all now, plainly. And they call that friendship killing and then burying one another. And they all with their wives and families at home. More especially Jack Power, keeping that barmaid. He does, of course. His wife is always sick, or going to be sick, or just getting better of it. And he's a good-looking man still, though he's getting a bit grey over the years. They're a nice lot, all of them. Well, they're not going to get my husband again into their clutches if I can help it, making fun of him then behind his back. I know well when he goes on with his idiotics, because he has sense enough not to squander every penny piece he earns down their guts and looks after his wife and family good-for-nothings. Poor Paddy Dignam all the same. I'm sorry in a way from what are his wife and five children going to do? Unless he was insured. Comical little teetotum, always stuck up in some pub corner and her or her son waiting. Bill Bailey, won't you please come home? Her widow's weeds won't approve her appearance. They're awfully becoming though if you're good looking. What man, wasn't he?
Yep. Oh, wait a moment. I know. That forlorn looking spectacle, you can call him a husband. I think that's where it was.
Yes. It's some little bitch that he got in with. Even when I was with him, with Millie, at the college races, the bicycle races in Trinity College, that hornblower, Bloom saw him in the old times, Trinity, now the Trinity College has changed completely, but at the back of it, there was an entrance, later a garage, and now it's gone. There was a man guarding it, hornblower in hunting costume, and Bloom saw him, that hornblower. So Bloom could get in free. With a child's bonnet on top of his knob, they had strange hats, led us into by the back way. He was throwing sheep's eyes at those two, doing skirt duty, probably women walking and showing their skirts. Up and down. I tried to wink at him first. No use, of course. And that's the way his money goes. I think that's a song from what's very common. Pop goes the weasel. That's the way the money goes. It was a common song. This is the fruits of Mr. Paddy Dignam. Yes. So she knows about the funeral. They were all in great style at the grand funeral, and we know it was a very shabby funeral, in the paper Boylan brought in. So when Boylan was still with her, he got the newspaper
to read the result of the races. I was angry that he didn't win. But the newspaper also carried, as we saw in the in Umea's chapter, that carries the result of the race. Boylan brought in. If they saw a real officer's funeral, that'd be something, she means, in a garrison like Gibraltar, when a high officer dies and his funeral is going on. Reversed arms, muffled drums, the poor horse walking behind in black, and at an officer's funeral, I think that there's the coffin and the horse walks or is led off afterwards. This is the funeral in military style. El boom. Now she, maybe in your books, it isn't right, but it should be El boom, because the newspaper, as we remember, called him El boom without the O. But in some older editions, it said bloom. But it would be El boom. And Tom Kernan, he was mentioned at the funeral. That drunken little barrelly man that bit his tongue off. Tom Kernan is a tea merchant. He was around most of the day. And those of us who read Dubliners know that he once fell down the stairs in a pub or something like that. That's a story. Race in Dubliners that bit his tongue off, falling down the men's WC. That's how the story begins. Drunk in some place or other, and Martin Cunningham and the two Dedaluses. So she remembers who was mentioned at the funeral. The two Dedaluses, we know, of course, that Stephen Dedalus was not at the funeral, but he was mentioned in the report. And Fanny McCoy's husband, that is McCoy. Now, you know, McCoy was also mentioned in the funeral report, but McCoy was not at the funeral. In fact, he said he couldn't go, and Bloom put in his name. I just want to emphasize how many things in reports are wrong. McCoy's husband. She, of course, knows McCoy rather as the husband of somebody she knows well. White head of cabbage, skinny thing, with a turn in her eyes, trying to sing my song. We know from the conversation McCoy had in the morning with Bloom that she, Fanny McCoy, is also a singer, but the Bloom thing, of course, she's nothing compared to Molly. With a turn in her eye, trying to sing my songs. She'd want to be born all over again, and her old green dress with a low neck, as she can't attract them any other way, so she doesn't think much of her arrivals, like a dabbling on a rainy day. Must be an Irish phrase. I see it all now plainly, and they call that friendship, killing and burying one another. And they're all with their wives and families at home more, especially Jack Power. Jack Power was also at the funeral. He's usually a companion of Cunningham, Jack Power. Keeping that barmaid he does. There's a rumor that Bloom knows of that Power has a kind of relation with the barmaid he does. We don't know if it's true. Of course, his wife is always sick or going to be sick or just getting better of it. And he's a good-looking man still. Though, he's getting a bit grey over the years. They're a nice lot,
all of them. Well, they're not going to get my husband again into their clutches. And it's quite true, Bloom doesn't go out and drink, as most Irish do, clutches, if I can help it. Making fun of him then, behind his back, which is true. I know well when he goes on with his idiots, because he has sense enough not to squander every penny piece he earns. So Bloom is economic, doesn't go to pubs to spend money buying rounds of beer. He earns down there gullets and looks after his wife and family. Good for nothing, it's poor Paddy Dignam, who was an alcoholic, we know. And all the same, I'm sorry in a way for him. What are his wife and five children going to do? And we know that's a problem. There was a collection raised and all of it, unless he was insured. And we also know that you went to the Dignam family with Cunningham and Power to talk about the insurance situation. Comic little teetotum, that's a very small person, always stuck up in some pub corner, and her or her son waiting. So that was quite common, that children were sent out late at night to get the husbands back from the pub, spending the money. Bill Bailey, won't you please come home? So children would often say, Father, come home. And that's a song, Bill Bailey. I know it only as a jazz tune, but it must have been common in Ireland. Bill Bailey, won't you please come home? Her widow's weeds. Widows are dressed in black, and the term is a widow's weeds. Won't improve her appearance. They're awfully becoming, though, if you're good-looking. What man? Wasn't he? So.
Yes, he was at the Glencree dinner, and Ben Dollard, bass barreltone, the night he borrowed the swallowtail to sing out of in Hollow Street, squeezed and squashed into them, and grinning all over his big dolly face like a well-whipped child's body. Didn't he look a balmy ballocks? Sure enough, that must have been a spectacle on the stage. Imagine paying 5 shillings in the preserved seats for that, to see him. And Simon Dedalus, too, he was always turning up half-screwed, singing the second verse first. The old love is the new was one of his. So sweetly sang the maiden on the hawthorn bough. He was always on for flirtifying, too, when I sang Maritana with him at Freddie Mayer's private opera. He had a delicious, glorious voice. Phoebe, dearest, goodbye, sweetheart. He always sang it, not like Bartell Darcy. Sweetheart, goodbye. Of course, he had the gift of the voice, so there was no art in it. All over you like a warm shower bath. Oh, Maritana, wildwood flower, we sang splendidly, though it was a bit too high for my register. Even transposed. And he was married at the time to May Goulding, but then he'd say or do something to knock the good out of it. He's a widower now. I wonder what sort is his son. He says he's an author and going to be a university professor of Italian, and I'm to take lessons. What is he driving at now? Showing him my photo. It's not good of me. I ought to have got it taken in drapery. That never looks out of fashion. Still, I look young in it. I wonder he didn't make him a present of it altogether. Me too. After all, why not? I saw him driving down to the Kingsbridge station with his father and mother. I was in mourning. That's 11 years ago now. Yes, he'd be 11. Now what was the good in going into mourning for what was neither one thing nor the other? Of course he insisted. He'd go into mourning for the cat. I suppose he's a man now by this time. He was an innocent boy then. And a darling little fellow in his Lord Fauntleroy suit and curly hair, like a prince on the stage when I saw him at Matt Dillon's. They liked me too, I remember. They all do.
Where are we? Where's the moment I'll have? I hope. Yes, he was at the Kalenkri dinner. That's mentioned. Kalenkri was in a hospital of sorts, and the Blooms were invited at the dinner. Maybe Molly was singing there, a big affair. And Ben Dollard. Ben Dollard is the heavy bass voice in Science. Bass baritone. Bass baritone is called bass baritone. The night he borrowed the Swallowtail to sing out in Hollow Street. And we heard of that in the Science chapter, that Dollard needed a kind of a wedding garment, and the Blooms were selling old clothes in Old Street, squeezed and squashed into them, and grinning all over his big dolly face. Don't know what the dolly face is. Like a well-whipped child's bottom. Didn't he look a balmy ballocks? Ballocks is a reference for a man. It's not a compliment. It actually means originally testicles, but it's used quite often over. Sure enough. That's 11 years ago now. Is that right? Yeah. Oh, wait a moment. Yeah, 11 years ago now, yes, he'd be 11. No, what was the good in going into mourning? So she thinks too of Rudy, the son that died 11 years ago, and would be, the Bloom often thinks of it, she too. He'd be 11. Though, what was the good in going into mourning for what was neither one thing nor the other? It seems that Bloom's son, their son, was something wrong with him from the beginning. He didn't live long, so he wasn't a healthy child. We heard that before. In the mourning for what was neither one thing nor the other. The first cry was enough for me. I heard a death watch too, ticking in the wall like a superstition of a prediction of death. In the wall. Of course, he insisted he'd go into mourning for the cat. I suppose he's a man now. This is Stephen Dedalus by this time. He was an innocent boy then. And a darling little fellow in his Lord Fauntleroy suit, that must be a suit from a story, Lord Fauntleroy, and curly hair, like a prince on the stage. When I saw him at my Dillon's, that's where they had these parties that were visiting, Bloom often remembers it. He liked me too, and they must have met sometimes when Stephen was a little boy. We heard that before. They all do. Great. I think I stop here. I'm not in all that great shape. So if it's all right, then, and we do it then in 2 weeks. Next week, we have the workshop international meeting in the foundation, but we meet again in 2 weeks then. So see you then next time. But,
see you. Bye-bye. Goodbye. Thank you.
And bye. Yeah.